You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Thursday, June 8th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Comey speaks and writes. Meanwhile, the Senate assault on health care. Seven states sue the EPA over pesticides. And again, we'll talk about how beautiful that wall is going to be. But let's go right to the
when I left, we did not have an investigation.
Comey hearings.
President Trump.
Where we have
that's a question that'll
Senator Tom Cotton
investigation, I think.
Questioning Comey. Just to let you know what we're going to do, we're going to listen to the rest of this testimony. It'll probably end in the next half hour, and then we're going to pick up on what was said earlier and the written testimony, and we'll talk about health care. So here is Tom Cotton and
there was in fact collusion
Senator Comey and Senator Comey, maybe James Comey, former FBI director. We'll do a little commentary on this, but not too much.
The Trump campaign and the Russians, and you said to me, and I'm quoting you now, you said, not at this time. Has anything changed since we last spoke? Senator Feinstein said, well, no, it hasn't. Do you have any reason to doubt those statements?
I don't doubt that Senator Feinstein was saying what she understood. I just don't want to go down that path, first of all, because I'm not in the government anymore. And answering in the negative, I just worry leads me deeper and deeper into talking about the investigation in an open setting. I'm always trying to be fair. I don't want to be unfair to President Trump. I'm not trying to suggest by my answer something nefarious, but I don't want to get into the business of saying not as to this person, not as to that person.
On February 14th, the New York Times published a story, the headline of which was, Trump campaign aides had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence. You were asked earlier if that was an inaccurate story, and you said in the main. Would it be fair to characterize that story as almost entirely wrong?
Yes.
Did you have, at the time that story was published, any indication of any contact between Trump people and Russians, intelligence officers, other government officials or close associates of the Russian government?
That's one I can't answer sitting here.
Ooh.
We can discuss that in a classified setting then.
Oh.
I want to turn attention now to Mr. Flynn and the allegations of his underlying conduct. To be specific, his alleged interactions with the Russian ambassador on the telephone and then what he said to senior Trump administration officials and Department of Justice officials. I understand there are other issues with Mr. Flynn related to his receipt of foreign monies. Or disclosure of potential advocacy activity on behalf of foreign governments. Those are serious and credible allegations that I'm sure will be pursued, but I want to speak specifically about his interactions with the Russian ambassador. There was a story on January 23rd in the Washington Post that says, entitled, FBI reviewed Flynn's calls with Russian ambassador but found nothing illicit. Is this story accurate?
I don't want to comment on that, Senator, because I'm pretty sure the Bureau has not confirmed any interception of communications. And so I don't want to talk about that in an open setting.
Would it be improper for an incoming national security advisor to have a conversation with a foreign ambassador?
In my experience, no.
But you can't confirm or deny that the conversation happened, and we would need to know the contents of that conversation to know if it was, in fact, improper.
Yeah, I don't think I can talk about that in an open setting. And again, I've been out of government now a month. So I don't want to talk about things when it's now somebody else's responsibility. But maybe in the classified setting, we can talk more about that.
You stated earlier that there was an open investigation of Mr. Flynn in the FBI. Did you or any FBI agent ever sense that Mr. Flynn attempted to deceive you or made false statements to an FBI agent?
I don't want to go too far. That was the subject of the criminal inquiry.
Did you ever come close to closing the investigation on Mr. Flynn?
I don't think I can talk about that in an open setting either.
We can discuss these more in the closed setting then. Mr. Comey, in 2004, you were a part of a well-publicized event about an intelligence program that had been recertified several times, and you were acting Attorney General when Attorney General John Ashcroft was incapacitated due to illness. There was a dramatic showdown at the hospital here. The next day, you said that you wrote a letter of resignation and signed it before you went to meet with President Bush to explain why you refused to certify it. Is that accurate?
Yes, I think so.
At any time in the 3.5 months you were the FBI director during the Trump administration, did you ever write and sign a letter of recommendation and leave it on your desk?
Letter of resignation? No, sir.
Letter of resignation?
No, sir.
So despite all of the things that you've testified to here today, you didn't feel this rose to the level of an honest but serious difference of legal opinion between accomplished and skilled lawyers in that 2004 episode?
I wouldn't characterize the circumstances in 2004 that way, but to answer, no, I didn't encounter any circumstance that led me to intend to resign, consider to resign. No, sir.
Thank you.
Senator Harris.
Director Comey, I want to thank you. You are now a private citizen, and you are enduring a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, and each of us gets 7 minutes instead of five as yesterday to ask you questions. So thank you
now,
for wanting
I'm between
to
opportunities
truth.
Now.
Well,
so
well, you are. I'm sure you'll have future opportunities. You know, you and I are both former prosecutors. I'm not going to require you to answer. I just want to make a statement that in my experience of prosecuting cases, when a robber held a gun to somebody's head and said, "I hope you will give me your wallet," the word hope was not the most operative word at that moment. But you don't have to respond to that point. I have a series of questions to ask you, and they're going to start with, are you aware of any meetings between the Trump administration officials and Russian officials during the campaign that have not been acknowledged by those officials in the White House?
That's not a, even if I remember clearly, that's not a question I can answer in an open setting.
Are you aware of any efforts by Trump campaign officials or associates of the campaign to hide their communications with Russian officials through encrypted communications or other means?
I have to give you the same answer, Senator.
Sure. In the course of the FBI's investigation, did you ever come across anything that suggested that communications records, documents, or other evidence had been destroyed?
I think I got to give you the same answer because it would touch on investigative matters.
And are you aware of any efforts or potential efforts to conceal communications between campaign officials and Russian officials?
I think I have to give you the same answer, Senator.
Thank you. As a former attorney general, I have a series of questions about your connection with the Attorney General during the course of your tenure as director. What is your understanding of the parameters of General Sessions' recusal from the Russia investigation?
I think it's described in a written release or statement from DOJ, which I don't remember sitting here, but the gist was he would be recused from all matters relating to Russia and the campaign or activities of Russia and the 16 election, I think, something like that.
Is your knowledge of the extent of his recusal based on the public statements he's made?
Correct.
Okay. So was there any kind of memorandum issued from the Attorney General or the Department of Justice to the FBI outlining the parameters of his recusal?
Not that I'm aware of.
And do you know if he reviewed any FBI or DOJ documents pertaining to the investigation before he was recused?
I don't know.
And after he was recused? I'm assuming it's the same answer.
Same answer.
And aside from any notice or memorandum that was not sent or was, what mechanism or processes were in place to ensure that the Attorney General would not have any connection with the investigation, to your knowledge?
I don't know for sure. I know that he had consulted with career ethics officials that know how to run a recusal at DOJ, but I don't know what mechanism they set up.
And the Attorney General recused himself from the investigation, but do you believe it was appropriate for him to be involved in the firing of the chief investigator of that case, of that Russia interference?
That's something I can't answer sitting here. It's a reasonable question, but that would depend on a lot of things I don't know. Like, what did he know? What was he told? Did he realize that the president was doing it because of the Russia investigation? Things like that. I just don't know the answer.
You've mentioned in your written testimony in here that the president essentially asked you for a loyalty pledge. Are you aware of him making the same request of any other members of the cabinet?
I am not.
Do you know one way or another what he...
I don't know one way or another. I've never heard anything about it.
And you mentioned that on... you had the conversation where he hoped that you would let the Flynn matter go on February 14th or thereabouts. It's my understanding that Mr. Sessions was recused from any involvement in the investigation about a full 2 weeks later. To your knowledge, was the Attorney General, did he have access to information about the investigation in those interim 2 weeks?
I don't, in theory, sure, because he's the Attorney General, I don't know whether he had any contact with any materials related to that.
To your knowledge, was there any directive that he should not have any contact with any information about the Russian investigation between the February 14th date and the day he was ultimately recused or recused himself on March 2nd?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know one way or another.
And did you speak to the Attorney General about the Russia investigation before his recusal?
I don't think so, no.
Do you know if anyone in the department, in the FBI, forwarded any documents or information or memos of any sort to the attention of the Attorney General before his recusal?
I don't know of any or remember any sitting here. It's possible, but I don't remember any.
Do you know if the Attorney General was involved, in fact involved, in any aspect of the Russia investigation after his recusal on the 2nd of March?
I don't. I would assume not, but I don't. Well, let me say it this way. I don't know of any information that would lead me to believe he did something to touch the Russia investigation after the recusal.
In your written testimony, you indicate that after you were left alone with the president, you mentioned that it was inappropriate and should never happen again to the Attorney General. And apparently he did not reply, and you write that he did not reply. What did he do, if anything? Did he just look at you? Was there a pause for a moment? What happened?
I don't remember real clearly. I have a recollection of him just kind of looking at me, and there's a danger here I'm projecting onto him, so this may be a faulty memory, but I kind of got his body language gave me the sense like, what am I going to do?
Did he shrug?
I don't remember clearly. I think the reason I have that impression is I have some recollection of almost imperceptible, like, what am I going to do? But I don't have a clear recollection of that. He didn't say anything.
At least he's not
lying. And on
blind.
That same February 14th meeting, you said you understood the president to be requesting that you drop the investigation. After that meeting, however, you received two calls from the president, March 30th and April 11th. Where the president talked about a cloud over his presidency. Has anything you've learned in the months since your February 14th meeting changed your understanding of the president's request? I guess it would be what he has said in public documents or public interviews?
Correct.
Okay. And is there anything about this investigation that you believe is in any way biased or is not being informed by a process of seeking the truth?
No. The appointment of a special counsel should offer great, especially given who that person is, great comfort to Americans, no matter what your political affiliation is, that this will be done independently, competently, and honestly.
And do you believe that he should have full authority, Mr. Mueller, to be able to pursue that investigation?
Yes, and knowing him well over the years, if there's something that he thinks he needs, he will speak up about it.
Do you believe he should have full independence?
Oh, yeah. And he wouldn't be part of it if he wasn't going to get full independence.
Thank you.
Kamala Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Either wants us
Mr.
to
Comey,
perceive that
I'll
there may have been some
at,
evidence destruction by Jeff Sessions, or has reason to believe that there was evidence destruction by Jeff Sessions.
I appreciate your willingness to appear here.
And
today,
interesting that Mueller himself perceives, at least according to Comey, that he has.
If an FBI agent
full independence.
Has reason to believe that a crime has
this
been
is,
committed,
Cornyn.
Do they have a duty to report it?
That's a good question. I don't know that there's a legal duty to report it. They certainly have a cultural, ethical duty to report it.
You're unsure whether they would have a legal duty?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've not thought about it before. I don't know where the legal... There's a statute that prohibits misprision of a felony, knowing of a felony, and taking steps to conceal it, but this is a different question. And so, look, let me be clear. I would expect any FBI agent who has reason, information about a crime being committed to report it.
Me too.
But where you rest that obligation, I don't know. It exists.
And let me ask you as a general proposition, if you're trying to make an investigation go away, is firing an FBI director a good way to make that happen? By that, I mean...
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but I'm obviously hopelessly biased, given that I was the one fired.
I understand it's personal.
No, given the nature of the FBI, I meant what I said. There's no indispensable people in the world, including at the FBI, that there's lots of bad things about me not being at the FBI. Most of them are for me, but the work's going to go on as before.
So nothing that's happened that you've testified to here today has impeded the investigation of the FBI or Director Mueller's commitment to get to the bottom of this from the standpoint of the FBI and the Department of Justice. Would you agree with that?
Correct. Especially the appointment of former Director Mueller is critical part of that equation.
Let me take you back to the Clinton
In other words, we needed a special counsel, which did not exist prior to my firing.
You've been cast as a hero or a villain, depending on the whose political ox is being gored at many different times during the course of the Clinton email investigation, even now, perhaps. But you clearly were troubled by the conduct of the sitting attorney general, Loretta Lynch, when it came to the Clinton email investigation. You mentioned the characterization that you'd been asked to accept that this was a matter and not a criminal investigation, which you said it was. There was the matter of President Clinton's meeting on the tarmac with the sitting attorney general at a time when his wife was a subject to a criminal investigation, and you suggested that perhaps there are other matters that you may be able to share with us later on in a classified setting. But it seems to me that you clearly believe that Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, had an appearance of a conflict of interest on the Clinton email investigation. Is that correct?
I think that's fair. I didn't believe she could credibly decline that investigation, at least not without grievous damage to the Department of Justice and to the FBI.
And under Department of Justice and FBI norms, wouldn't it have been appropriate for the Attorney General, or if she had recused herself, which she did not do, for the Deputy Attorney General to appoint a special counsel? That's essentially what's happened now with Director Mueller. Would that have been an appropriate step in the Clinton email investigation, in your opinion?
Certainly a possible step, yes, sir.
And were you aware that Ms. Lynch had been requested numerous times to appoint a special counsel and had refused?
Yes, I think members of Congress had repeatedly asked, yes, sir.
Yours truly did on multiple occasions. And that heightened your concerns about the appearance of a conflict of interest with the Department of Justice, which caused you to make what you have described as an incredibly painful decision to basically take the matter up yourself, and led to that July press conference.
Yes, sir. I can say, after the former President Clinton, met on the plane with the Attorney General, I considered whether I should call for the appointment of a special counsel, and I decided that would be an unfair thing to do because I knew there was no case there. We had investigated it very, very thoroughly. I know this is a subject of passionate disagreement, but I knew there was no case there. And calling for the appointment of special counsel would be brutally unfair because it would send the message, aha, there's something here. That was my judgment. Again, lots of people have different views of it, but that's how I thought about it.
Well, if a special counsel had been appointed, they could have made that determination that there was nothing there and declined to pursue it, right?
Sure, but it would have been many months later or a year later.
Right. Oh, you just ruined my entire line of questioning.
Given the experience of the Clinton email investigation and what happened do you think it's unreasonable
Hillary's a bitch, right. Am I right?
Anyone, any president.
I'm winging it here because I've totally got sidetracked by your shutting down my line of questioning.
FBI investigation. Do you think it's unreasonable for them to want the FBI director to publicly announce that so that this cloud over his administration would be removed?
I think that's a reasonable point of view. The concern would be, obviously, because if that boomerang comes back, it's going to be a very big deal because there will be a duty to correct.
Well, we saw that in the Clinton email investigation, of course.
Yes, I recall that.
Yeah, I know you do.
Am I right? That's right. My wife's a killer.
Let me ask you finally in the minute that we have left. There was this conversation back and forth about loyalty, and I think we all appreciate the fact that an FBI director is a unique public official in the sense that he's a political appointee in one sense, but he has a duty of independence to pursue the law pursuant to the Constitution and laws of the United States. And so when the president asked you about loyalty, you got in this back and forth about, well, I'll pledge you my honesty. And then it looks like, from what I've read, you agreed upon honest loyalty or something like that. Is that the characterization?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Rest my case, you big, tall, gawky son of a bitch.
Honest loyalty. I think
there have been enough press said. Reports that the president, in addition to asking you to drop the Flynn investigation, has asked other senior intelligence officials to take steps which would tend to undermine the investigation into Russia. There's been reports that he's asked DNI Coates and Admiral Rogers to make public statements exonerating him or taking the pressure off him, and also reports about Admiral Rogers and Director Pompeo to intervene and reach out to the FBI and ask them. Are you aware of any of these or do you have any information with respect to any of these allegations?
I don't. I'm aware of the public reporting, but I had no contact, no conversation with any of those leaders about that subject.
Thank you. You have testified that you interpret the discussion with the president about Flynn as a direction to stop the investigation. Is that correct?
Yes.
You've testified that the president asked you to lift the cloud by essentially making public statements exonerating him and perhaps others. You refused, correct?
I didn't do it. I didn't refuse the president. I told him we would see what we could do, and then the second time he called, I told him in substance that's something your lawyer will have to take up with the Justice Department.
And part of the underlying logic was that, as we've discussed many times throughout this morning, is the duty to correct. That is one of a theoretical issue, but also a very practical issue. Was there your feeling that the direction of the investigation could, in fact, include the president?
Well, in theory, I mean, as I explained, the concern of one of my senior leader colleagues was, if you're looking at potential coordination between the campaign and Russia, the person at the head of the campaign is the candidate. So logically, this person argued, the candidate's knowledge, understanding, will logically become a part of your inquiry if it proceeds. And so I understood that argument. My view was that what I said to the president was accurate and fair to him. I resisted the idea of publicly saying it, although if the Justice Department had wanted to, that I would have done it, because of the duty to correct and the slippery slope problem.
And again, also, you've testified that the president asked you repeatedly to be loyal to him, and you responded you would be honestly loyal, which is, I think, your way of saying, I'll be honest and I'll be the head of the FBI and independent. Is that fair?
Correct. I tried honest first. And also, I mean, you see it in my testimony, I also tried to explain to him why it's in his interest. Right. And every president's interest for the FBI to
be
a part, in a way, because its credibility is important to a president and to the country. And so I tried to hold the line. It got very awkward, and I then said...
What do you mean awkward?
You'll always have honesty from me. He said honest loyalty, and then I acceded to that as a way to end this
awkwardness.
What about
loyal, honest,
the culmination
loyal.
Of all these events, you're summarily fired.
On a scale of
fired,
1 to 10.
Without any explanation or anything else.
Michael Cera should play James Comey in these awkward situations.
yes. So you're fired. So do you believe that you were fired because you refused to take the president's direction? Is that the ultimate reason?
I don't know for sure. I know I was fired. Again, I take the president's words. I know I was fired because of something about the way I was conducting the Russia investigation. Was in some way putting pressure on him, in some way
irritating
him, and he decided to fire me because of that.
You're a,
I can't go farther than that.
You're the awkward one.
The Russian
investigation,
as you pointed out, and as all my colleagues have reflected, is one of the most serious hostile acts against this country in our history, undermining the very core of our democracy and our elections.
Guy's got a solid Rhode Island accent.
A discrete event. It will likely occur. It's probably being prepared now for 18 and 20 and beyond.
I hope so.
And yet, where the President of the United States fires you because, in your own words, some relation to this investigation. And then he shows up in the Oval Office with the Russian foreign minister, first after classifying you as crazy and a real nut job.
They didn't say I was awkward.
You effectively disproved this morning. He said, I face great pressure because of Russia got taken off.
You can barely talk.
Your conclusion would be that the president, I would think, is downplaying the seriousness of this threat. In fact, took specific steps to stop
totally vindicated by the nut job comment
of the Russian Russian influence. And also, from what you've said or what was been said this morning, doesn't seem to particularly interested in these hostile threats by the Russians. Is that fair?
I don't know that I can agree to that level of detail. There's no doubt that it's a fair judgment. It's my judgment that I was fired because of the Russia investigation. I was fired in some way to change, or the endeavor was to change the way the Russia investigation was being conducted. That is a very big deal, and not just because it involves me. The nature of the FBI and the nature of its work requires that it not be the subject of political consideration.
Well, listen to that guy.
And on top of that, the Russia investigation itself is vital because of the threat.
Can we go back to the loyal, honesty, loyal, honest?
If any Americans are part of helping the Russians do that to us, that is a very big deal.
And I'm confident that if that is the case, Director Mueller will find that evidence.
Finally, the president tweeted that James Comey better hope that there are no tapes of our conversation before he starts leaking to the press. Was that a rather unsubtle attempt to intimidate you from testifying and intimidate anyone else who seriously crosses his path of not doing it?
I'm not going to sit here and try and interpret the president's tweets. To me, its major impact was, as I said, occurred to me in the middle of the night, holy cow, there might be tapes. And if there are tapes, it's not just my word against his on the direction to get rid of the Flynn investigation.
What a showboat.
Thank you very much.
Way to spike into the end zone, you egomaniac.
Here comes John McCain.
In the case
I don't know which way you're going this morning.
Hillary Clinton.
Got to look at the internal poll numbers and then pretend I'm driven by integrity. Goddamn son of a bitch.
Sufficient evidence to bring a suit against her, although it had been very careless in their behavior.
I put myself at a leverage point here. I don't know where to position myself.
In that case, that it was not necessary
to
further pursue her. Yet at the same time, in the case
of
Mr. Comey, you said that there was not enough information to make a conclusion. Tell me the difference between your conclusion as far as former Secretary Clinton is concerned and Mr. Trump.
I'll see you on Meet the Press.
The Clinton investigation was a completed investigation that the FBI had been deeply involved in, and so I had an opportunity to understand all the facts and apply those facts against the law as I understood them. This investigation was underway, still going when I was fired. So it's nowhere near in the same place. At least it wasn't when I was.
But it's still ongoing.
Correct. So far as I know, it was when I left.
That investigation was going on. This investigation is going on. You reached separate conclusions.
No, that one was done.
Investigation of any involvement of Secretary Clinton or any of her associates is completed.
Yes, as of July the 5th, the FBI completed its investigative work, and that's what I was announcing, what we had done and what we had found.
What about the Jews' Twitter account? Didn't that start
everything?
At least
in the minds of this member, there's a whole lot of questions remaining about what went on, particularly considering the fact that, as you mentioned, it's a, quote, big deal as to what went on during the campaign. So I'm glad you concluded that part of the investigation, but I think that the American people have a whole lot of questions out there, particularly since you just emphasized the role that Russia played.
I love John McCain
and obviously,
now. He's my guy.
He's a candidate for president at
He's
the time.
My guy.
You know, I so wish there was a lot more people around who'd spent some time in this whole Viet Cong prison.
Situation
I love heroes fake news, that don't get caught.
As you just described it,
but ones that do get caught that come out in place. Favor of me in this hearing, I also
help
love.
Me out here.
Like guys who crashed your plane and spent 5 years in a Viet Cong prison are on Meet the Press all the time and defend me. Clinton had to do
with this totally makes up for getting captured.
Don't have to worry about it anymore.
With respect to Secretary, I'm a little confused, Senator. With respect to Secretary Clinton, we investigated criminal investigation in connection with her use of a personal email server.
I understand.
And that's the investigation I announced the conclusion
but
of on July 5th.
What about the fact that I appointed Sarah Palin as the vice president to nominate?
What about all the liberal morons that used to Secretary be, he's someone who values country, even if you disagree with him.
In the Russia involvement in our engagement in our election. I don't quite understand how you could be done with that, but not completely done with the whole investigation of their attempt to affect the outcome of our election.
No, I'm sorry. We're not, at least when I left, when I was fired on May the 9th, there was still an open, active investigation to understand the Russian efforts and whether any Americans work with them.
But you reached the conclusion that there was no reason to bring charges against Secretary Clinton. So you reached a conclusion.
What?
In the case of Mr. Comey, the president, Comey, case of President Trump, you have an ongoing investigation.
I'm wondering if so John McCain is having a breakdown.
Who you're done
I need
with,
some goddamn ginkgo.
You have a long way
I don't know what the fuck is
correct.
Going on. I just know
I don't know how far the FBI has to go, but yes,
myself.
That
Can
the
we just
Clinton email
Syria
investigation was completed. The investigation of Russia's efforts in connection with the election and whether there was any coordination. And if so, with whom, between Russia and the campaign, was ongoing when I left.
You just made it clear in what you said. This is a, quote, big deal, unquote. I think it's hard to reconcile. In one case, you reach a complete conclusion, and the other side, you have
How is it possible that you have separate investigations and one is different from the other?
How it doesn't make any kind of sense.
As we know. As you call
At
it,
first,
quote,
I didn't think
deal.
Being cucked
She's
by Donald Trump would be fun, but I've learned
case,
to enjoy
say,
it. Just
will
like
be
that
no
little Cuban guy over
the
there,
case
too.
Of President Trump, the investigation continues. What has been brought out in this hearing is more and more emphasis on the Russian engagement and involvement in this campaign. How serious do you think this was?
Very serious. I want to say something, be clear. We have not announced, and there was no predication to announce, an investigation of whether the Russians may have coordinated with Secretary Clinton's campaign. Secretary Clinton's campaign.
No, but they may not have been involved with their campaign. They were involved with the entire presidential campaign, obviously.
Of course. Yes, sir. And that is an investigation that began last summer, and so far as I'm aware, it continues.
So both President Trump and former candidate Clinton are both involved in the investigation, yet one of them, you said, there's going to be no charges, and the other one, the investigation continues. Well, I think there's a double standard there, to tell you the truth. Then when the president said to you, you talked about the April 11th phone call.
Double standard.
You said,
is it,
because I've been very loyal
is it,
to you. Very no loyal.
How inappropriate would for me to say thing, that though. Watching this is like when
is
Dick Clark came back to that
what,
New
quote,
Year's
that
Eve thing after
was?
A stroke?
Yes.
Why didn't you ask?
I have no
really
idea what you're
sad.
Talking about, but I like how you're like, would
it,
it be inappropriate
to
for me to tweet
for
what I just said on my show?
I understand it. I took it to be some an effort to communicate to me this that there is a relationship between us
John
where
McCain
I've been good to you, you should be good to
party.
Me.
That's why I think we can all respect him across the political aisle.
I can think of all those
curiosity
DC
if,
twerps
the
that venerated
States
this
We had that thing, you know. I'd like to know what the hell that thing is. Particularly if I'm the director of the FBI.
Yeah, I get that, Senator. Honestly, I'll tell you what, this is speculation, but what I concluded at the time is in his memory he was searching back to our encounter at the dinner and was preparing himself to say, I offered loyalty to you, you promised loyalty to me, and all of a sudden his memory showed him that did not happen, And I think he pulled up short. That's just a guess, but I have a lot of conversations with humans over the years.
I think I would have had some curiosity if it had been about me.
It's like talking to a Jew when you're trying to buy a diamond for your goddamn wife.
Are you aware of anything that would believe you to believe that the president or the members of the administration or members of the campaign could potentially be used to coerce or blackmail the administration?
That's a subject for investigations, not something I can comment on sitting here.
Fuck you.
But you reached that conclusion as far as Secretary Clinton was concerned. But you're not reaching a conclusion as far as this administration is concerned.
I literally
concerned.
Have no idea what he's talking about.
Are you aware of anything?
He's out of time.
He doesn't hear the information.
This is actually kind of tragic.
That could.
He just wants the. Coerce
members of the administration
or
blackmail the administration.
I think he's having soup time.
That's not a question I can answer.
Is it soup time?
Senator's time.
Where's soup?
No, he wants to say why is only the Trump campaign being investigated? Why is only the Trump campaign being investigated?
Can I say for members, we'll reconvene promptly at 1 p.m. In the hearing room. We have a vote
Everybody,
scheduled for 1:45.
They're zooming in on people's reaction to what's happened to John McCain, I think. There's a lot of concern amongst his colleagues.
Be there at 1 o'clock. We have about 3 minutes. I'd like to have
John
order.
McCain.
Photographers,
hey,
return
James,
to where you were, please.
I got a question.
This hearing's not adjourned yet.
I still
have... We'll remove you.
Someone... Where am I?
About 3 minutes of updates that we would love to cover as soon as we get into the closed session before we have
an opportunity to spend some time with Senator Comey. I killed as many gooks if you got inches of height, you son of a bitch.
Based on our agreement,
what was I saying again?
To adjourn that
yeah, Hillary's a bitch. Put that up and get that on Breitbart. I want a re-election. God damn it.
I urge you to eat at that time. Jim, several of us on this committee have had the opportunity to work with you since you walked in the door. I want to say personally, on behalf of all the committee members, we're
really
grateful to you for your service to your country, not just in the capacity as FBI director, but as prosecutor, and more importantly,
Burr is not on board with the Republican
like it is.
Game plan today.
I want
clearly
to say to your
by far asked them. We'll get
we're grateful to them with the level of cooperation that they have shown us, with the trust we've built. Between both organizations, the Congress and the Bureau, we couldn't do our job if it wasn't for their willingness to share candidly with us the work that we need to see. This hearing is the ninth public hearing this committee has had this year. That is twice the historical year-long average of this committee. I think the Vice Chairman and my biggest challenge when this investigation has concluded is to return our hearings to the secrecy of a closed hearing, to encourage our members not to freely talk about intelligence matters publicly.
Are we in a closed hearing now? Why is it Hillary in jail?
We have a huge job. And that's to represent the entire body of the United States Senate and the American people, to make sure that we work with the intelligence community.
Okay, we don't need to hear any more of this.
To keep America safe.
All right, so that is the hearing, and then they head into a private session wherein John McCain is going to get to the bottom of this.
So wait a second.
Honestly,
that was when Bill Clinton met with that black girl on a tarmac, but you said that the investigation was over, but now Anthony Weiner's going to be on the predator list. That doesn't make sense. I got a follow-up.
That honestly was really a bizarre line of questioning. He was saying, how is it possible that you, at the end of the Clinton investigation, came to the conclusion that there was nothing happened that was wrong, yet you haven't come to the same conclusion while this is an ongoing investigation? And then he seemed to conflate the investigation of the emails with Hillary Clinton with her potential involvement in the context of the Russian question of their involvement in this, in somehow influencing the election.
And now,
which is a separate investigation of which Hillary Clinton is
no one has ever reported, and it seemed that it was so outside the realm of plausibility that Hillary Clinton would be a subject of that investigation, because it you know, and I don't even know that she is, in the context of this investigation, which was a counterintelligence investigation, right? It's not a criminal one. So there is no victim per se. And even if this was a criminal investigation, if you could make that analogy, Clinton wouldn't necessarily be the victim. I mean, she is arguably like somewhere between a bystander and maybe someone who saw something, but I don't even think she would have any evidence to provide. So I would imagine it seems it would be strange, even if the FBI, unless there was something that nobody knows.
No one knows, and it's not been reported on at all.
They would even interview her about it.
Right.
Because the Podesta email, all those things, she would have no operational understanding about any of it. So
the New York Post said that Huma invited Anthony Weiner back to the apartment, even though they said he had a divorce. You got thoughts about that, President Secretary General Comey?
Well, he was conflating the two on purpose, and he just wants to get some sound bites and be on.
I guarantee you,
Fox,
that will
Friends.
Be sound bites.
I guarantee
no
you that will be
that.
Sound bites. But you can talk about, like, I can see the paths that the Republicans were taking, like, you're a showboat, yeah, this and that. But that.
Well, the other one was funny.
I would be shocked.
This was so bad. Why don't you quit?
I would. Yes, I mean, that one actually makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would be surprised if they even play that on Fox with John McCain.
They'll play it on the Daily Show.
Such a convoluted hot mess.
Well, yeah, because the argument is a convoluted hot mess.
Well, that's my point. I mean, he was obviously all of the Republicans, as far as I can tell, short of Burr, and I think even Collins to a certain extent, we're trying to push this narrative of either Comey admits that Trump was not being investigated, but remember, that was limited to a counterintelligence investigation as opposed to a criminal investigation. In fact, the criminal came up, I think, only once or twice during the hearing, and Comey would not address that directly.
But Sam.
But every other Republican, short of Burr, frankly, who I thought was...
I think Burr asked not helpful questions from a Trump perspective,
yes,
at all.
We're not on the train. So what we're going to do is we're going to go over the hearing. And then I also... we're going to go late today. We may not have even a... we'll probably do a freebie Thursday. Although that seems... No, we won't.
We haven't done a freebie for a while.
All right. Well, Friday, tomorrow, we're going to be tight then.
Very tight.
Well, all right, whatever.
The whole Russia meme.
Look, this is a special. Oh, you know what? The problem is, I didn't do this.
There you go.
Now, because it's a special report, we can do a freebie Thursday.
But this is when Burr asked about, is there any doubt that Russia.
Okay. So we're going to start, and we're going to go in order. If you watch the hearings, hopefully maybe our commentary will be of some value to you. And if you didn't, it will. And I will. I do want to get to what's going on in terms of Obamacare, because it is moving through the Senate, and or the repeal and replace, and it's going to be a disaster, and we're going to have to sort of re-engage with that. Today, while these hearings are going on, not only are the Republicans gearing up to repeal and replace Obamacare, not only was Tom Price had a hearing where he was explaining how Obamacare is failing, and the president, mission accomplished in terms of creating enough uncertainty. We touched on this yesterday, where you have people exiting, people I mean insurance companies exiting markets in Iowa, in I think in in Minnesota or mini, or I think it was Minnesota. I have it in, but we've got, you're going to have a serious problem. Oh, excuse me, Ohio, where Obamacare is collapsing because of the president basically saying, we're going to get rid of the subsidy payments. And we should also say that in the House, if it hasn't happened already, they are planning to vote to essentially functionally repeal Dodd-Frank. This will then go to the Senate. So this is important stuff that's going on. And in many respects, the Comey show is a helpful distraction for the Republicans because there is no scrutiny about that. We're going to talk more about that stuff tomorrow. Just a reminder, Father's Day is just days away. And many of you are probably looking for the perfect Father's Day gift. But also many of you want to avoid having to deal with finding the perfect Father's Day gift. What do you get your dad? Another tie?
Do people really do that much?
I don't know. I've gotten a couple of ties, to be honest.
I guess that makes sense.
You know what I would like?
What?
Barbecue. Have my friends over.
That's a good, but that's a, that I have heard that. And that's every father that I have heard, a barbecue or a, what you're about to roll into has made
them
happy.
You need to have something to cook at the barbecue.
Exactly.
And for me, you know, I'm so old now and so rarely wear ties that all I want is a reason to have people over to come visit. Have my kids come back and visit me. Well, they're 11 and 4, so they never go away. But let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get my limited time Father's Day package. And you go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code REPORT in the search bar. So it's like a special thing you got to do. When you get there, you go into the search bar, you hit REPORT, and you get 80% off. What do you get? Two filet mignon, two top sirloins, four chicken fried steaks. Oh my gosh, I don't know why that's hitting me today, but that seems, every day I read this list, because we've done this ad a couple of times, there's another thing that sticks out at me.
They're all delicious.
Four boneless pork chops, four burgers, four jumbo franks, a 12-ounce package of all beef meatballs, 1 pound of fries, four caramel apple tartlets. One Omaha Steak seasoning packet plus get four additional burgers free. All this for less than $50. I've told you why they do this, right? Because they know when you try this once, you're going to go back to them.
I love you, Dad.
If you're looking for a convenient and quick Father's Day gift, go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code REPORT in the search bar, add the family gift pack to your cart, get 80% savings. Grab your dad and fire up the grill. All right, let's get into this. Here is Burr. Starting off, he's the committee chairperson of the Intelligence Committee. There was a lot of kerfuffle that Comey was going to the Intelligence Committee as opposed to judiciary. But I think this is because Comey feels more comfortable talking about the counter-espionage part of this investigation than the criminal investigation. And these guys are more read in. I also think he probably has more faith in Burr, particularly after this hearing. Here is Burr asking Comey about any doubt in terms of the Russian interference.
Do you have any doubt that Russia attempted to interfere in the 2016 elections?
None.
Do you have any doubt that the Russian government was behind the intrusions in the DNC and the DCCC systems and the subsequent leaks of that information?
No doubt.
Do you have any doubt that the Russian government was behind the cyber intrusion into state voter files?
No.
Do you have any doubt that officials of the Russian government were fully aware of these activities?
No doubt.
Are you confident that no votes cast in the 2016 presidential election were altered?
I'm confident. By the time when I left as director, I'd seen no indication of that whatsoever.
Director Comey, did the president at any time ask you to stop the FBI investigation into Russian involvement in the 2016 U.S. elections?
Not to my understanding, no.
Did any individual working for this administration, including the Justice Department, ask you to stop the Russian investigation?
No.
Okay, so there's a couple of things here. One, he is clear that he was not asked to stop the broader Russian interference investigation. Later in the testimony, he'll talk about it. He specifically thought that the president had asked him to stop the Flynn testimony. But I think this is the most definitive statement that we've had and the greatest piece of evidence that we've had that Russia attempted to influence the election, that Russia, what did he call it, exfiltrated voter files. He seems to think that it didn't necessarily have any impact on the election, which I think goes a long way to saying, like, this is not why Hillary Clinton lost, although, you know, he's no expert, but, you know, you take it, this is his perception, at least in terms of the votes themselves. But you to believe that the whole Russia attempted to do this, and different people can have different opinions as to whether or not this is, you know, as earth-shattering as it's made out to be. Personally, I don't find it that earth-shattering. We engage in this type of counter, you know, psyops and more to influence elections. We have done that consistently for, I don't know, 100 and some odd years. Maybe Matt knows of an instance prior to that. So I don't find it so earth-shattering that they did this. But I will say it's quite clear, unless you think Comey is got up there and perjured himself with a complete, you know, a Department of Justice apparatus that would do anything to find that he has perjured himself at this point. And a party control of the House and the Senate who would do anything to find that he perjured himself. Unless you think that he did that for, I guess, just a intense desire for us to get into a war with Russia, or perhaps maybe
hit the nail on the head.
It's time to sort of accept the premise that Russia did this. You can then say, look, it's not that big of a deal, or it's not why she lost, or whatever. But if you're still of the mind that this whole thing about Russia attempting to interfere and actually, in some instances, at least getting voter files for whatever worth that may or may not be, is completely made up and fictionalized, I think it's time to move past that. So I found that quite stunning and a very interesting way for Burr to lead off this hearing. And is this in order, more or less? Okay. Here is Comey, and I want to go through his written testimony. We should also say, and I neglect to say this up front, maybe I'll go back and forth on this. Comey, and a lot of people were anticipating that he would get in and read his statement up front, which was an interesting decision not to do this. On one hand, if there was video of him reading this statement, it would have been rather powerful because there are some fairly powerful moments in this statement. On the other hand, he may have wanted to make sure that there was enough time in this hearing for him to be sufficiently questioned on the premises that he was setting up here. I don't think there was a huge amount in the hearing that came out, but there was some stuff, and we're going to get to it, particularly involving Jeff Sessions, particularly involving just his credibility broadly. In his statement, he goes through the first every time that he had an interaction with Donald Trump. And he said that I had only two interactions with Barack Obama. One was sitting down talking, and he reiterated this in his in-person testimony. One was with Barack Obama for an hour talking about policing policy. The other was just to say goodbye in 2016.
See how little Obama took crime seriously?
He has already had 9 one-on-one, or he did before he was fired, one-on-one conversation with President Trump in 4 months, he writes. 3 in person, 6 on the phone. Initially, for his first January 6th briefing, this is now the president-elect, they went in and wanted to let him know about this dossier and about, as a person caught up in this investigation, he was not the subject of it, but he, from a counterintelligence perspective, had to inform President-elect Trump that, look, there is stuff out there that may or may not be true that the Russians may want to use against you. He writes, we also agreed, this is him talking to the Director of National Intelligence, that I would do it alone to minimize potential embarrassment to the president-elect, because, you know, this is the P-tape he's talking about. And I was concerned that the briefing might create a situation where a new president came into office uncertain about whether the FBI was conducting counterintelligence investigation of his personal conduct. Do we have audio of when he brings up that LBJ Hoover situation? We don't. Okay, so in the hearing, he backed this up by saying that he didn't want it to be a J. Edgar Hoover situation, and Matt has informed us that. Go, Matt.
Hoover implied that LBJ was taping Nixon's campaign plane, and that Hoover knew that that meant that Nixon would think that Hoover knew about Nixon's plan or scuttling of the Vietnam peace talks.
Now
so that's why Nixon kept Hoover on, is because he thought Hoover knew about that stuff, but Hoover was
and
actually
that Hoover was actually blackmailing him.
Yeah.
Now it is before since or come after
out.
Lincoln.
It has since come out, obviously, that Nixon did send Kissinger, and they did scuttle these peace talks, causing the deaths of thousands of U.S. servicemen and hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese and Cambodians as well. Nevertheless, obviously, Donald Trump has no awareness of that one way or another, but this was what was on Comey's mind. We did not have, and he assured President-elect Trump, that we were not investigating him personally. Or I said, I should be prepared to assure President-elect Trump, this is as he's planning to go in there, that we're not investigating him personally, which was true. We did not have an open counterintelligence case on him. And he clearly, in his testimony, wanted to make that specific. We did not have an open counterintelligence case on him. It is conceivable, and it does not seem to have been addressed in any way that we know at this point, whether or not there's a criminal investigation involving him. He goes on, after his first conversation with President-elect, to get into the car, into an FBI vehicle, and type up his meeting with Trump on a laptop outside the Trump Tower the moment I walked out of the meeting. He gave 3 reasons as to why he did this. One, because he was meeting with the president alone, or president-elect alone, which was an odd situation. 2, the context of this conversation. Unlike meeting with President Obama about police policy, it had nothing to do with Obama. So he didn't feel like he needed this type of record on it. In fact, is this where he says it? Okay, and 3, here he is explaining why he went right into an FBI vehicle to type it up on a laptop after he met with President-elect Trump.
What was it about that meeting that led you to determine that you needed to start putting down a written record?
A combination of things. I think the circumstances, the subject matter, and the person I was interacting with. Circumstances first, I was alone with the President of the United States, or the President-elect, soon to be President. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the President, President-elect, personally. And then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document. That combination of things I'd never experienced before, but it led me to believe I got to write it down, and I got to write it down in a very detailed way.
Now, Warner was, who asked this question, Senator Mark Warner from Virginia, I think was so thrown off that he, when he reiterated what Comey just told him, said, you thought he would not be truthful. He used some other euphemism for lie when Comey clearly said, like, I was afraid he was going to lie about it. And, I mean, it's unclear whether or not he had planned to type that up before he went in, or he just got into the car and said, give me a laptop. So here he is talking about his next, this is January 27th dinner. And in his written testimony, he talks about the president said, I need loyalty. I expect loyalty. I didn't move, speak, or change my facial expression in any way during the awkward silence that followed. We simply looked at each other in silence. The conversation then moved on, but he returned to the subject near the end of our dinner. I mean, just imagine how awkward it was.
I mean,
and so he says at the end of the dinner, I need loyalty. I replied, this is Comey, you will always get honesty from me. He paused and then said, that's what I want. Honest loyalty. I paused and then said, you will get that from me. During the dinner, the president returned to the salacious material I had briefed him on about on January 6th. This is the P-tape, folks. As he had done previously, he expressed his disgust for the allegations and strongly denied them. You know, I won the electoral vote, and I did not have anybody pee on me. He said he was considering ordering me to investigate the alleged incident to prove it didn't happen. I replied that he should give that careful thought because it might create a narrative that we were investigating him personally, which we weren't, and because it was very difficult to prove a negative. He said he would think about it and asked me to think about it. Do we have audio to support? This is, and then here is Comey being asked about those salacious details in the Steele dossier. This is the dossier prepared by the former MI6 agent. Here is Burr asking Comey on this, and here is Comey's response.
At the time of your departure from the FBI, was the FBI able to confirm any criminal allegations contained in the Steele document?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's a question I can answer in an open setting because it goes into the details of the investigation.
Hmm.
Wow.
In other words, I can't say no.
Can't say fake news.
Or in other words, yeah, so what? The guy likes to get peed on. At least he's making America great again.
Well,
and the pussies, look, and the homos,
look,
and everyone else.
But here's
else.
The point. He's not talking about the salacious details. He's talking about criminal activity right. in the Steele dossier, which may not necessarily have anything to do with Trump himself. May have to do with the other people mentioned who were involved in things like money laundering and whatnot. So we don't know. Then Comey, in his written testimony.
In this, just to be really quick about it, the Steele document does have a lot of things that are actually, as you indicate, I mean, far more disturbing than somebody's just kind of like personal, kind of gross sexual behavior. So I mean,
far more criminal.
Far more criminal. I guess nothing could be more disturbing.
I don't know that
anything
could be more disturbing.
Fair enough. But there is a lot more to that document than just that grotesque story.
I mean, even if we're talking about Trump and something vanilla,
I still would have a problem. I'm getting nauseous. Disturbing. Nauseous at this point already.
So then he goes to the February 14th Oval Office meeting. This is, again, his written testimony. And this is where, and this is really key because this is really key because this is where the scene where he is in the Oval Office with the vice president, the deputy director of the CIA, the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, Secretary of Homeland Security, Attorney General, and Jared Kushner, who may be all of those positions at that point. I wasn't sure what he was appointed. And, okay, the president signaled the end of the briefing by thanking the group and telling them all he wanted to speak to me alone. I stayed in my chair. As the participants started to leave the Oval Office, the attorney general lingered by my chair, but the president thanked him and said he wanted to speak only with me. The last person to leave was Jared Kushner, who also stood by my chair and exchanged pleasantries with me. The president then excused him, saying he wanted to speak with me. When the door by the grandfather clock closed and we were alone, the president began by saying, "I want to talk about Mike Flynn." Flynn had resigned the previous day. Here is his spoken testimony in regards to that very moment.
Let me move on. My time's running out. Again, it seems a bit strange. You were in a meeting, and your direct superior, the Attorney General, was in that meeting as well. Yet the president asked everyone to leave, including the Attorney General to leave, before he brought up the matter of General Flynn. What was your impression of that type of action? And have you ever seen anything like that before?
No. My impression was something big is about to happen. I need to remember every single word that is spoken. And again, I could be wrong, but I'm 56 years old. I've been seen a few things. My sense was the Attorney General knew he shouldn't be leaving, which is why he was lingering. And I don't know Mr. Kushner well, but I think he picked up on the same thing. And so I knew something was about to happen that I needed to pay very close attention to.
So there it is. And that's when he went in to say, "Flynn's a good guy. I hope you can let this go." He writes, "I immediately prepared an unclassified memo of the conversation about Flynn and discussed the matter with FBI senior leadership." Now, he expanded upon this in his spoken testimony. He wrote an unclassified memo ostensibly because a classified memo would get hung up in a lot of different procedures and could not even be shared within the FBI. Now, there's some speculation. Did he do this so that the memo could be made public ultimately? And he said it sounded more like he wanted this to be able to be passed around. So he's very specific about what he included in there to make sure that it was unclassified. "I had understood the president to be requesting that we drop any investigation of Flynn in connection with false statements about his conversations with the Russian ambassador in December." Now, Lish, what's that guy's name? I'm not sure where he's from, but one of the senators, one of the Republicans, Risch, tried to make it sound like when Trump said, "I hope you can let this go. And I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He's a good guy," that he was being more aspirational, not necessarily trying to in any way order or request. It was more just like, "I hope."
Wouldn't it be great if we had world peace? And by the way, I hope that Mike Flynn can get off.
It would be such a hope of mine.
It would be such a hope of mine if my sons were intelligent.
So tonight I'm going to lie down and I'm just going to pray and that's it.
At that time, Comey decided it made little sense to report it to Attorney General Sessions. "We expected he would likely recuse himself from involvement in Russia-related investigations." And here is why Comey expands on why coming out, having written an unclassified memo, having shared it with senior FBI leadership, why they did not inform Attorney General Sessions as to Trump's request about dropping the Flynn case. And this is really crucial because I think this revelation about Sessions and perhaps Kamala Harris's questioning, although seemingly going nowhere, may reveal something that this intelligence committee knows about Sessions.
Let me turn to the Attorney General. In your statement, you said that you and the FBI leadership team decided not to discuss the president's actions with Attorney General Sessions, even though he had not recused himself. What was it about the Attorney General's own interactions with the Russians or his behavior with regard to the investigation that would have led the entire leadership of the FBI to make this decision?
Our judgment, as I recall, was that he was very close to and inevitably going to recuse himself for a variety of reasons. We also were aware of facts that I can't discuss in an open setting that would make his continued engagement in a Russia-related investigation problematic. And so we were convinced, and in fact, I think we'd already heard that the career people were recommending that he recuse himself, that he was not going to be in contact with Russia-related matters much longer. And that turned out to be the case.
How would...
Now, understand, by that time, or I should say at this time, right? I mean, it's conceivable at that time it was not public knowledge that Sessions had met multiple times with Russian officials and had lied about it in his Senate testimony. But today, that information is public. We know he lied on a security clearance form. We know that he met with Russians three times. That is not something that James Comey would need to go into private session to talk about. That is stuff he could say as reported in the media. We knew that stuff at that time. It's now been reported. There's obviously more to Jeff Sessions' relationship than we are aware of, that the public is aware of, with Russia. We don't know if it's financial. We don't know. We don't know. But there seems to be something going on with Jeff Sessions. Here is Kamala Harris. And we have the whole thing, right? That's from yesterday. Okay, we don't have Kamala Harris's today. Well, nevertheless, Kamala Harris went on to ask Comey if he was aware of any destruction of evidence, and it was all centered around what Jeff Sessions knew and when and what documents he was receiving from the FBI. So prior to being recused, or perhaps after supposedly being recused. There's a lot more to be learned, I think, about Jeff Sessions. I mean, to the extent that you start to wonder, why do we hear this story about Jeff Sessions not being in Donald Trump's favor this week? Why did we hear the story of Jeff Sessions supposedly offering to resign casually? You know, leaks go a lot of different ways, folks, with this stuff. Leaks go a lot of different ways. It's quite possible that they knew. What is, which one is this that you're putting up? This is Pence? Okay, well, yeah. No, we don't. That's... Okay, so now let's go back. Here Comey is asked. All right, so... And Comey got asked this quite a bit. Why wouldn't you publicly say, or why didn't we see any leaks that Donald Trump was not being personally investigated? Now, remember, on March 30th, he got a phone call from Donald Trump. The president called me at the FBI. He described the Russia investigation as, quote, a cloud that was impairing his ability to act on behalf of the country. He said he had nothing to do with Russia, had not been involved with hookers in Russia, and had always assumed he was being recorded when in Russia. He asked what we could do to lift the cloud. I responded that we were investigating the matter as quickly as we could, and there would be a great benefit if we didn't find anything to our having done the work well. He agreed, but then reemphasized the problems this was causing him. This is why James Comey did not want to announce publicly that they were not investigating Donald Trump. We had told congressional leaders that we were not personally investigating President Trump. I reminded him I had previously told him that. He repeatedly told me, we need to get that fact out. And then in parentheses, I did not tell the president that the FBI and the Department of Justice had been reluctant to make public statements, that we did not have an open case on President Trump for a number of reasons, most importantly, because it would create a duty to correct should that change. In other words, they had enough reason to believe that they could be investigating him in the near future. And if they publicly announced that they were not investigating him, it would obligate them to report that they were investigating him if that happened. And Comey did not want to do that. The president went on to say that if there were some satellite associates of his who did something wrong, it would be good to find that out.
You could tell how used he is to discarding people in his organization. He's like, look, is there anybody around here that's relatively unimportant that I could betray? Would that expedite this process?
He finished by stressing that the cloud was interfering with his ability to make deals for the country and said he hoped I could find a way out that he wasn't being investigated. Immediately after that conversation, I called Acting Deputy Attorney General Dana Bente. Sessions had by then recused himself on all Russia-related matters to report the substance of the call to the president, and I said I would wait his guidance. On April 11th, he got another call. He said that perhaps he would have his people reach out to the acting deputy attorney general after he reiterated his request that I get out, that he is not personally under investigation. He said, and Comey says, I passed this on to the acting attorney general. He said that he would have his people reach out to them. I said that that was the way his request should be handled. I said the White House counsel should contact the leadership of the DOJ to make the request, which was the traditional channel. He said he would do that and added, because I have been very loyal to you. Very loyal.
You catching a theme here, James?
Well, wait a second. Here's the weirdest part. I've been very loyal to you. Very loyal. We had that thing, you know. This is a quote. I did not reply or ask him what he meant by that thing. Now, look. Who knows what thing he thinks he had with James Comey?
We shared a moment. I mean,
maybe
it's
it was
undeniable.
That time I kissed you in the Oval Office when you were hiding in the curtains and I kissed you. Or maybe we had that thing. Where have you heard that before?
Now, James, I want you to prick your finger.
What is...
Draw a little blood.
What is another way of saying we had that thing? That thing...
Thing of
we
hours.
We have.
Thing of
I'm
hours.
I'm going to Google that. Let's see. We had that thing. What James. Thing? That thing. Our thing. Let's see. Our thing.
You're now officially a member of the Trump Organization.
Our thing.
We do a lot of things. Pee-pee tapes, fake universities. But through it all, we're loyal to...
I'm just Googling around. Look at that thing. That thing.
We practice.
Of ours. Honest. Our thing. Our thing. In Italian is Cosa Nostra.
My dad said that the WAPs were useless half-blacks, but I disagreed. I thought the organization was very impressive.
Apparently, our thing. That's what they would say. We have our thing.
Now, James, we're going to burn a picture of the Virgin Mary, and we're going to prick our blood together, and it's going to be a sign of your undying, honest loyalty to the organization.
Honest loyalty. Loyal honesty.
Now, in the first week, James, you might ask, what's this envelope of cash that Mr. Trump's handing me? That's your cut from the Cancer Kids cash.
Let me ask you something. Does Mrs. Comey like furs? Come over.
No, Mrs. Come Comey, don't look.
Come
back.
Over
come
to the closet.
Come on, Mrs. Comey. No, no, no. Come on, it's in the back.
Take your wife some furs.
It's in the back.
Take your wife some furs.
No, Mrs. Comey, come on. No, it's in the back. It's in the back. It's fine, James Quinn. It's in the back.
Does
no,
Mrs.
no, come right in here. I want to show you.
Does Mrs. Comey have a blender? I want to show you a blender that we have here. We got a great blender. Take a blender. I have no idea.
We
I
got
have
a
no
whole idea. University
but it's just
like
a weird thing
James.
To say, and I'm so bummed that that did not come up in the conversation in the actual live testimony. I mean, what was he possibly? We have that thing like we had at dinner. Or I don't know, like what?
And may your soul rot in eternity if you betray the Trump organization.
Folks, if Donald Trump ever calls you and says, we have that thing, and you don't know what he's talking about, just say, that thing? Just do it that way. Just that thing? Like that. You know, that thing. Our thing.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Trump is like, I will say, he is kind of like Paulie and Goodfellas, except not as smart. He's kind of like Paulie and Goodfellas mixed with Paulie Walnuts from The Sopranos.
Yeah, it is really crazy. Here are two quotes. Here's the question. Here's the sort of the money quotes in terms of obstruction. I mean, that is going to be the focus, I would imagine, of the personal investigation of Donald Trump. That would be my guess. And here is James Comey making the case. There are two elements to the evidence as to whether or not Donald Trump was trying to obstruct the Russia investigation by firing James Comey. One element of that is number five. You don't need James Comey to testify on. And that is that Donald Trump said it publicly. And James Comey reminds the committee of that.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Comey, I just want you to know that I have great respect for you. Senator Cornyn and I sit on the Judiciary Committee, so we have occasion to have you before us. And I know that you're a man of strength and integrity. And I really regret the situation that we all find ourselves in. I just want to say that. Let me begin with one overarching question. Why do you believe you were fired?
I guess I don't know for sure. I believe I take the president at his word that I was fired because of the Russia investigation. Something about the way I was conducting it, the president felt created pressure on him that he wanted to relieve. Again, I didn't know that at the time, but I've watched his interview. I've read the press accounts of his conversations. So I take him at his word there. Now, look, I could be wrong. Maybe he's saying something that's not true, but I take him at his word, at least based on what I know now.
So basically what he's saying is the smoking gun is that gun that you saw get fired in public smoking and left on the street that every television camera took a picture of and they put in a glass dome and then put it in the Smithsonian and it's there. You can observe it every day.
The Smithsonian. Why haven't we cut funding for that?
We even captured some of the smoke in the jar.
And then here is where Comey's testimony is actually going to be more relevant because on one hand, we have one person in the party of this conversation who said, I fired him because of the Russian investigation. Well, what about the other hand? The other hand is the other person who was party to those conversations. And here is his perspective on that conversation as to whether or not there was some type of offer or expectation from Trump that Comey would get rid of
the Flynn thing to keep his job, or get rid of the whole Russia thing to keep his job?
My common sense, again, I could be wrong, but my on here is there, he's looking to get something in exchange for granting my request to stay in the job.
You ever had any of those kind of requests before from anyone else you'd work for in the government?
No. And what made me uneasy was I'm, at that point, the director of the FBI. The reason that Congress created a 10-year term is so that the director is not feeling as if they're serving at with political loyalty owed to any particular person.
So there you have it. That is the other half of that two-person conversation, the state of mind that he was in. And so there seems to be, and maybe there's more, maybe there's more evidence that there was obstruction in some fashion. But there's certainly a prima facie case. Now, remember, Paul Ryan said he wasn't worried about any of this. During the hearings, he said he didn't have time to watch them. Paul Ryan is, there is not going to be any impeachment. Robert Mueller could, is going to give his recommendations to the acting attorney general in this, Rod Rosenstein, assuming he's still around at that point. Mueller could even maybe go public with it if he really felt he wanted to. It's probably unlikely, but without permission. But no matter what he comes up with, Donald Trump is not going to get impeached by a Republican Congress. It's just not going to happen. So this is more about people just knowing what's happening. This is sort of like science for knowledge sake type of situation. All right, lastly, this is also important because it turns out Mike Pence is a liar. Here was Mike Pence, who heard about the fact that Flynn was lying to him a couple of weeks before Flynn was fired. Here is Wyden asking Comey about this.
Vice President Pence was the head of the transition. To your knowledge, was he aware of the concerns about Michael Flynn prior to or during General Flynn's tenure as National Security Advisor?
I don't. You're asking, including up to the time when Flynn was forced to resign? My understanding is that he was, and I'm trying to remember where I get that understanding from. I think from Acting Attorney General Yates.
All right, so he knew a couple of weeks before he was fired. So, and that was quite early on. Not necessarily during the transition at that point. We haven't established that quite yet. All right, so that is... all right, so that's that's all we got on the hearings. And then this goes into private session. But this is not, you know, this is James Comey. Nobody's getting locked up this afternoon, but probably not what the White House wants. However, probably not too big of a problem for the House and the Senate. Like I said, in the House today, they were voting to overturn Dodd-Frank. In the Senate, there's a couple of things going on that you should know about. The Senate is going to pass a bill. There's just no all this stuff about they can't pass it. They're going to pass a bill. It may be one that supposedly alienates a couple of conservatives in the House, in the Senate. You know, maybe, but they can afford to lose two. They are meeting daily. This is according to the New York Times. They're meeting daily behind, they're coalescing around a proposal that would provide money for cost sharing reduction. So in other words, they're going to pay the subsidies. It's So insurance companies receive under the Affordable Care Act so they can reduce deductibles and other out-of-pockets for low-income consumers. This affects 7 million people. There's still a question as to whether or not they will cut Medicaid. And here's the important part, because, look, all this bill has to do is pass the Senate, and then they go and they go into committee, they go into conference, and they hammer it out. Whatever the Senate passes, it's going to get a little bit more harsh. It's going to go a little further towards the House bill. But there's every reason to believe that when they are looking at this type of tax cut, that they're going to go back to these two chambers, and the leaders are going to say, this is the best tax cut we're going to get. We cannot do anything else that is on the Republican agenda, that is the longstanding Republican agenda, without passing this repeal and replace. We can't get tax reform down the road. We'll screw up our budgeting. Everything is contingent upon this passing. And if we don't do this, we're not going to do anything. And you're going to have to go back to your constituents in 2018 and say, we did nothing. We did absolutely nothing. We got rid of bank regulations. That's it. And they're going to pass it. And they're going to have you believe that they're going to maintain. This is the way it's going to go, I think. Remember, there's, you know, three aspects of this. It's the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. There's the patient protections. There's the private exchanges. And then there's the expanded Medicaid. The expanded Medicaid is going to get blasted. The exchanges are going to exist in some form or another. They're going to come in the form of, instead of getting subsidies through an exchange, you're going to go on to the individual market, and you're going to get some form of subsidy, but it's going to be less. So your insurance is going to be more expensive if you're in the private, the individual market. But what makes this worse than the status quo prior to the passage of Obamacare is going to be the impact it has on employer-based health insurance. Right now, the reporting is the Senate Republicans generally agree it's desirable to give states more flexibility, allowing them to obtain waivers from the federal definition of essential health benefits. But many Republicans are reluctant to dilute the protections for people with pre-existing conditions. The part that's missing in there are things like annual caps, lifetime caps, rescission, and whatnot. Those three, though, and the essential health benefits, those three are really crucial. The pre-existing conditions, they can say that they're going to offer some mechanism, but it's going to be one of those mechanisms, again, where it's like, if you lose your health coverage. But as long as waivers are in there, what's going to happen is that if you, and we've talked about this, but it bears repeating because this is going to be live again. When the Affordable Care Act passed in 2011, the Obama administration gave guidance to Health and Human Services that essentially is how to interpret the law. And it impacts regulations. The regulation that said you have to use the guidelines by state regulators if you are in that state as to whether or not your insurance must offer this or offer that, those we don't need anymore because there's a baseline that's been created by the Affordable Care Act. So if you're an employer in New York, if you want, you can take the regulations from Alabama, and it's not going to make that much of a difference. There may be some subtle differences that may save you money or may be more effective for the type of people that you're insuring in your employees, but it's not going to make a material difference because we have such a strong now baseline where you have to offer essential benefits. You can't have lifetime caps. You can't have annual caps. You can't have rescission. You can't deny pre-existing conditions. All that is now nationalized. So any deviance, any differences between the states are irrelevant, largely. That guidance remains in effect. And if you have a waiver in Alabama, and I say Alabama because it's a Republican-controlled state, and you're an employer in New York, and you can get a waiver to go by Alabama's standards, there may be an even an argument that you have a fiduciary responsibility to your company to get the cheapest health insurance. Because it's going to be cheaper because it's going to be crap insurance. And when you do that in New York State, your competitor is also going to do it. So the whole premise of like, well, we offer a better benefits package, that's going to be, even if that exists, even if there's differentials, it's going to be, there's going to be a race to the bottom. And instead of impacting 7 million people in the private insurance individual market, and instead of impacting the other nine or so that are getting through expanded Medicaid, then you start to impact 20, 30, 40, 70 million people. But by then, you know, by the time people realize that, maybe the Senate agrees, the in conference, they basically come out, well, no, this is going to go in effect until 2020. We'll keep the subsidies in until 2020, and then we'll get the tax reform, we'll get this scored. This week, you should know that there is still a debate about it, but supposedly the parliamentarian in the Senate has ruled that the House bill complies with the Byrd rule and can be voted upon as a reconciliation bill. In other words, 51 votes. It gets a little bit intricate. The Democrats still holding out a little bit of hope that there is that the parliamentarian hasn't ruled fully on it. But Republicans are quite sure at this point that it's going to. So that's where we're at. And if any of this stuff I've just spoken about gets more than 3 minutes of coverage until the day they pass this thing, I'd be shocked. Really important. Really important that you make sure your neighbors know about this and that you keep the pressure on. Whether you're doing that through going up to town halls or not holding many of those, or whether you're calling your senators or whatnot. Really, really important. All right. Should we take a break and then go into... let's take a break.
Yeah, just take a break.
We'll take a break, sure. Go into the fun half. So it's not a full freebie, but it was an extended version. In the fun half, we'll just take some phone calls and...
situation sad.
Talk about... yeah. I ran into Dave Derby last night.
Right, yeah.
Who saying. Is the who composed and sings "Pilot Light," which is at the end of the the member show. And just coincidentally, he didn't know I was there at the. He was playing a music show. He'd invited me. He didn't know I had. He played that song. He'd just come across it again. Folks,
did you mosh to that song?
Oh, totally. Oh, totally.
Come on, let's rage.
Everybody.
Hello. Pilot Light. Come on.
Do they still do that? Is there still mosh pits?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen them.
Did you ever go into mosh pits?
I've been in a mosh pit, I'm sure. You yeah. Have you?
I've oh, been yeah. In a mosh pit.
Oh, yeah. Back when, in the day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, with yeah. My bow tie and everything.
Oh,
I don't like the arms flailing ones, but I like the...
Oh, no. Yes. Yeah. There was no other type, buddy, back when you got to knock somebody down.
No, I like a bit safer than that.
Yeah, I went in one Rage Against the Machine concert a long time ago. And, yeah, I was out to hurt some people.
There you go. Well, we've all mellowed, fortunately. Folks, you can become a member of the Majority Report by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. It is your support that keeps this show alive. We really need having a bit of a rash, I think, of people having some financial difficulties. So if you have the opportunity to and the means to support the program, please do. You go to jointhemajorityreport.com, become a member, and then you are supporting the program. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you extra material. And I also want to say we're working it out today, but members, I believe, within the next couple of days are going to get an email from us. Keep an eye open for it. Don't email us. We'll email you with a link, a private link on a special service to watch the 16-minute, I mean, I think it's fair to call it a tour de force, the behind-the-scenes video of the live Majority Report show. There are cameos from some of your favorite IMers and callers, even some who weren't at the show. I'm not going to give it away, but some who weren't even at the show. You get to see all of us in our glory. What else? Janine, Matt Taibbi. What gift did I give Matt Taibbi behind the scenes?
Some vodka.
Spoiler alert. Jesus. Will you cut that out of the... God, Matt. Really?
I wouldn't say that I'm in my glory.
No, well, you're in your glory.
I'm in my glory.
I'm in my glory? That's my glory?
Look, we all have our glories.
That's not my glory.
Well.
I'm running around.
Members will decide.
It's
a spoiler alert. What is with you guys today?
It's not much of a spoiler alert.
A little bit. So just another bonus we give you as a member. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Don't forget majorityreportkickback.com. Check it out if you use Amazon or Jet. You can use our link there. Quick break, fun half, 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this.
Situation.